Hello and welcome to The Way I See It. My name is Vanessa Coleman. Now, it's going to be a bit of a ramble today, but I feel I have to start with the death of Sir Chris Woodhead, who died last week at the age of 68 of motor neurone disease, amongst other things. And now, he was the former chief inspector of schools, and I had the privilege of seeing him and listening to him at a UKIP conference, which I think was back in 2012 up in Skegness. He sat on the stage with a wheelchair, and if I am right, I think that he could only basically move his head. In fact, I don't think he could even get water to his lips. But he gave a most amazing speech, and I urge you to listen to it later on in the programme. I've just been reading some of the things about him, and he just said that, I quote, "The truth is, I would be more likely to drive myself in a wheelchair off a cliff in Cornwall than go to Dignitas and speak to a bearded social worker," he said. I think it's very sad when people reach this stage. I definitely believe in assisted dying. And one of the other things that only last month he wrote that it seems to me obvious that if the law were to be changed along the lines Lord Falconer is proposing, sufficient safeguards should be built in to protect the vulnerable. Equally, I cannot see how anybody can really believe that the state should decide the timing of my death. But we live and we die in a society where the needs and the rights of those who could benefit from a change in the law are brushed to one side. So I do hope that eventually we will be able to end our lives should we not want to live anymore. I mean, when you see animals that aren't well and you want to put them out of their misery. Well, I hope that I can put myself out of any misery should it get to that point. Anyway, still on the thing about death, it's been a terrible year this year for we've lost some iconic people, the likes of Christopher Lee and Patrick McNee, Terry Pratchett, lots of people that, in my view, are irreplaceable. Still on the subject of death, I have been so upset, so distressed watching the pictures coming from Tunisia. Particularly moving was the woman who said how she'd had to pretend to be dead. You know, you've seen these things in films, haven't you? And you think, my goodness, imagine how it would be that some crazed gunman was at your feet and you're lying there in the sand. And I just think it's absolutely appalling. And I also feel really, really sorry for the people of Tunisia, the good people, the hotel workers. I mean, what's going to happen now? Because quite frankly, who would want to visit somewhere like Tunisia or any countries similar to that? I mean, I visited Turkey many, many times over a decade ago, and Egypt numerous times, but quite frankly, I feel very scared now to travel. I really do, and I'm so glad I did my traveling back then. I mean, instead, I just have to call up the wonderful memories. And later on in the evening, I watched Hard Talk, and fascinating. There was Jürgen Todenhofer. I hope that's how you say it. Anyway, he's 74 years of age, and he was the first Western journalist ever to be given access to the Islamic State. He was there 10 days living amongst these people. And if I was frightened before about ISIS and what's happening, believe you me, I'm even more frightened now after listening to this. What he said was that basically we in the West are underestimating ISIS. He said that ISIS is much stronger than we think. He said it now has dimensions larger than the UK and is supported by an almost ecstatic enthusiasm that he has never encountered in any other war zone. He goes on to say that each day, hundreds of willing fighters arrive from all over the world. And for him, he said it was incomprehensible. He said that he'd moved among ISIS fighters, observing their living conditions and equipment. He said that they sleep in barracks formed from the shells of bombed out houses. What also really surprised me that, and he was surprised to see that they had plans to provide education to girls. And I think that was probably the most astounding thing. But the real frightening thing was when he said, most concerning of all is that ISIS fighters believe that all religions who agree with democracy have to die. And those were his words. And I think the fact that he was with them for 10 days, that his words that we need to be listening and to. And he says, he goes on to say that this is the largest religious cleansing strategy that has ever been planned in human history. Anyway, it's really and truthfully, you need to listen to this. As to the answer, I don't know, but I think that David Cameron and the other heads of state need to listen to this man and see what we're going to do about it, because I think it's just so frightening for everybody. So following on from that, I was very annoyed to read in the Sunday Express, the human rights madness as terror suspect does not have to wear a tag, as he claims it's a bomb. A judge ruled that the man, known only as DD, could have the tag removed because it would breach his human rights. The Somalian-born hate preacher is now free to walk Britain's streets without being monitored, despite being considered a threat. And the judge said that wearing the tag would make the fanatic delusional because he has mental health problems. I'm sorry, but to me, this is very, very wrong. If he's that mental, surely he should be put inside somewhere. But, you know, as far as I'm aware, wouldn't this set up a precedent? The fact that if it's good enough for one, it's good enough for another. So can you imagine all these people that are going to be tagged that then turn around and say, oh, no, I can't. And they could just quote this case. So I just think the law's gone very soft. I really do. I was very disturbed also to read last week about Rafe, I think it's Badawi. 3 years ago, Saudi Arabian police arrested Rafe for the crime of running a website that propagates liberal thought. He had a blog and he'd put the case for secularism in observations such as this. And I quote, states which are based on religion confine their people in the circle of faith and fear. And as if to prove his point, a Sharia court hauled him back into the fearful circle, sentencing him to 600 lashes and 7 years in jail for, and I quote again, going beyond the realm of obedience. And then on top of that, last year, deciding that he'd been let off too lightly, a judge upped the punishment to 1,000 lashes and 10 years imprisonment, plus a fine of 1 million riel, or riel, which is about £170,000. I mean, isn't that terrible when you think, here am I just feeling free enough to have free speech on this podcast? It is something that we must value. We must take care that we still have a free speech. And what really annoyed me was that the Foreign Office Minister, Baroness Annerley, said in the Lords last week, We maintain our view that freedom of religion and belief and freedom of expression are core rights that lead to long-term stability and good governance. But yes, of course, there was a but and one to take the breath away. She said, "My lords, I think we have to recognise that the actions of the Saudi government in these respects have the support of the vast majority of the Saudi population." And in the article, it said, well, no answer has yet been forthcoming. Perhaps the vast majority of Saudis are indeed fanatical sadists who rejoice to see liberal bloggers whipped. Or there again, perhaps they aren't. No one knows, because this is an absolute monarchy, not a marginal in the West Midlands being polled by Lord Ashcroft. I mean, even if you were a Saudi who deplored the flogging, you wouldn't say so publicly, especially when you saw what happened to a man who did. Badawi's lawyer was given a 15-year jail sentence last July for criticising the judiciary and so inflaming public opinion. How the judges measured that inflammation was not revealed. So perhaps Baroness Annalee gave them the benefit of her sociological expertise. Anyway, just to conclude on that, when I saw the pictures and I've signed petitions on Twitter and Facebook, it's very sad to see the pictures of him and then pictures of his wife and children. I reiterate, we must count our blessings that we, for the moment, are a country where we are allowed free speech, well, up to a point, anyway. Now, it's been a bit of a depressing podcast, hasn't it? I'm sorry about that. But sometimes, you know, I think you have to mention these things because it's part of life, part of what's going on. Anyway, now to kind of lighter things, but it's all about Bonkers EU. So reading about the EU threatens freedom to photograph. There are moves in the European Parliament to restrict the traditional freedom of panorama, and it would mean photographers, artists, and filmmakers would have to seek permissions and even have to pay to be able to film, paint, and photograph some of Europe's most iconic landmarks. A French ally of the Lib Dems has suggested legislation that would mean recognisable views such as the Eiffel Tower, the London Eye or the Angel of the North would no longer be free to depict with artists, photographers or filmmakers having to gain consent from the copyright holder. I mean, Peter Whittle, UKIP's culture spokesman, said, "This absurd mercenary proposal takes the EU's impulse to new heights. It is an appalling impingement on basic artistic and cultural liberties." He goes on to say, "It's extraordinary that at a time of such international turmoil, and while facing massive problems of its own making, the EU finds the time to put forward a serious restriction on the simple everyday rights and pastimes of ordinary members of the public." And while we're on about Bonkers EU, another thing that really concerns me is that Britain is facing growing threats of rabies thanks to the meddling EU. Apparently, stray dogs from Europe are being brought to the UK by British pet lovers who are taking advantage of relaxed cross-border laws to give animals a new life. Well, I can understand people wanting to do that, but it is very worrying if they're not strict like they used to be. I mean, you know, we've had some very strict quarantine rules before for animals coming into the country, and I quite frankly think, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and that's one of those. Did you know it's illegal to eat your pet horse? I mean, this is just sounds a bit dopey to me. Anyway, in 2009, apparently, the EU introduced a law which suggested it was illegal to eat pet horses after staggering figures reveal that around 2 million pet horses are eaten across the EU each year. So, of course, some British supermarkets considered themselves well above this law in 2012. I mean, the horse meat scandal hit Britain. Tesco and Iceland beef burgers and Lidl and Aldi were also rocked by this scandal. So, it says, just remember, it's okay to be so hungry you could eat a horse as long as you don't own it. So, basically, if you had a horse and I had a horse, I could eat your horse and you could eat mine. I mean, how bonkers can you get? And I also see that, you see, Princess Anne said we should consider eating horse meat. I have to agree with her, and you know that I'm an absolute animal lover, but the fact is what she's basically saying is that horses would be looked after better if the horse owners believe that they afterwards could sell them for meat. I mean, I'd rather a horse be slaughtered for its meat rather than left to starve to death or be not kept. I mean, I know there are some fabulous charities, and I support one of them up in Norwich that takes in horses, and, you know, not, they can't cope with so many. So, you know, I agree with that. Anyway, folks, I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. Just to let you know that the sun is shining outside. It's a beautiful day. And there are these terrible things going on in the world, but individually we just have to do our best, don't we? And on that note, I'm going to say have a great day and till we meet again. And don't forget to listen to these other podcasts. Thank you. Bye.